Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is Harry Dent. Harry Dent is Jr. is the founder of Dent Research, an economic forecasting firm specializing in demographic trends. His mission is helping people understand change using exciting new research developed from years of hands-on business experience. Mr. Dent offers unprecedented and refreshingly understandable tools for seeing the key economic trends that will affect your life, your business, and your investments over the rest of your lifetime. He's authored many books, one that I definitely read and enjoyed, The Great Boom Ahead in 1992, and his latest book, The Demographic Cliff. He's also editor of the free newsletter, Economy and Markets. Mr. Dent, welcome to our show.
Nice to be here, Bruce.
I want to say first off, I have respect for you. Two main things that you do that I think takes guts is that your titles leave no doubt as to where you stand, and that you've been both a bull and a bear when you thought it was appropriate. Not everybody does that. So thanks for doing that.
Okay. Yeah, that is what we do.
Okay. How did you get into demographics? That's kind of an unusual thing for somebody to take on, and you did it very early on.
Well, it sure wasn't from taking economics courses. I was basically came out of Harvard Business School and was a consultant with Bain & Company to top 100 companies, and I started seeing how the baby boomers were changing things. There were so many of them, but I really got it when I started doing the same type of strategic consulting to new ventures who were almost exclusively appealing to young baby boomers that were coming along and starting new trends. And, of course, they ended up driving our whole economy from 1983 to 2007, something I found a couple years later, that there was a direct correlation between a 46-year lag on the birth index and booms and busts in our economy, because that's when the average household spends the most money in their life. So I got into it through consulting and trying to help my clients see changes coming, and ended up finding, oh my gosh, this is really the key to macroeconomics as well.
One of the statements in your books is that people do predictable things as they age, and that appeals to me because that makes sense. I can see my peers as I've grown up from, you know, being a young adult, getting married and so forth. We all sort of in the same time frame found ourselves doing very similar things. And you have it down to where there's a lot of categories that you look at and say, this is when you're most likely to peak at, and then whatever product it is that you want to mention.
It's really, I mean, the macro is age 46 for the average person. And actually, for the most affluent, it's age 53 is the peak in spending, which is right now in late 2014. So there's going to be some prizes next year, as well as on car sales. But yeah, I mean, we can look at, you know, baby cribs all the way to nursing homes and everything in between. From cradle to grave, there's things we spend on at different times in our life. And so it's not just the macro economy where we can see which sectors of the economy are likely to do best at times. And even in downturns, there's going to be sectors like healthcare and travel and financial planning and things like that are going to continue to do better than other categories, even when I see a downturn for the next several years.
In real estate, we would take a look at a large participant, maybe even hedge funds, who came into an area and they bought everything in sight or made an offer on everything in sight. We would consider them market makers, where they could change the market by whatever they did. In a way, the baby boom generation has been that market maker. Whatever age they have been in has been the dominant, maybe the dominant thing that was sold or invested in.
Yeah, and you know, the thing about the baby boom, and I think what made it easier for me to discover how important they were, is just so many of them. I mean, the generation is so much larger in magnitude, relative magnitude, than the Bob Hope generation before them. And even people say, oh, the echo boom or the millennials coming behind them, oh, there's more of them. Well, it's not the same magnitude of increase. And when you count all the immigrants that came more into the baby boom generation, there's still more peak baby boomers than millennials. And this is the first time in history we're going to see a generation smaller. But the baby boom was an outsized generation. So, you know, somebody called them early on a pig moving through a python, and that's exactly what they are. So they exaggerate everything. And so they exaggerated this boom, they exaggerated this bubble, and now they're going to exaggerate this downturn, because I mean, the government's just going to have to keep printing trillions and trillions and trillions to offset the natural slowing. I mean, older people not only don't borrow money, they pay down their loans, they don't buy durable goods, especially after automobiles this year, and they spend less on just about everything, even food. I mean, I can tell people when, you know, when people are the tallest on average, when they eat the most calories, and when they weigh the most, and that is age 60. So no wonder that weight, you know, Weight Watchers and all this, all these weight loss things are doing so well right now. The baby boomers are at their heaviest now in the next 7 or 8 years.
Now, obviously, we're not the only country that has a baby boom generation. And you wrote about in 1989, the title was Our Power to Predict. Now, I don't know how much of a, I don't know if it got into bookstores, but that was something that you were talking about Japan. Is that correct?
Yeah. That's when we first predicted that Japan was going to take a big fall in the 90s, while the U.S. and Europe and other major countries have the greatest boom in history. Nobody, and I mean nobody, saw that combination. There were some people like Sir John Templeton in the early 90s that saw the, you know, the incredible boom, and he saw it more on the globalization trend, and I saw it more on the global demographics trend. But there was nobody that saw that Japan was going to crash, because their baby boom peaked much earlier than U.S. and Europe. And again, it's just demographics. It allows you to see around the corner. And I tell you, there's going to be two surprises over the next couple of years for the global economy. One is that Germany is just going to continue to disappoint. And it has a deeper slowdown in demographics than Japan did in the 90s. And China is the only emerging country, and of course they've been growing rapidly, that is going to see their workforce and demographic trends slow down modestly over the next decade and then rapidly after that. So everybody thinks China's going to grow forever. Everybody thinks Germany's going to hold up the European Union. Neither are going to happen.
Yeah, it's I guess I started poking around when our T-bill started getting very, very low, and I found out that Germany's T-bill, 10-year T-bill, was at 0.44%. I didn't expect that.
Yeah, that's right. The government bonds, I mean, this is just, I can see it with Germany, because people don't understand the difficulty in their economy, and they're going to be running deficits in the future. But Japan, being down there in those low ranges when they have the highest debt ratios of any major country in the world and the fastest aging population, I mean, Germany's going to have a rapid, almost as rapidly an aging population, but they don't have anywhere near the debt problems and real estate bubbles and stuff that Japan had and has. And China's got the greatest bubble of any country in history, because their government drove their economy and has overbuilt everything and has pushed people from urban to rural areas 2 to 3 times as fast as any country in history. And I'm telling you, and I'm predicting more than anything else in the next several years, China is going to go down hard. There is going to be no soft landing in China. I've never seen such a mismanaged economy. They got 27% of condos empty, 30-40% excess capacity in all their major industries, bridges, roads, railways to nowhere, empty malls, empty offices. It's the biggest disaster in history. And you got 220 million unskilled people they forced into these cities out of their farms, who can't even go back to their farms if things fall apart, because they've been paved over with empty condos. China's going to go down as the greatest economic disaster in history, and I feel badly for those 220 million people. They're going to be trapped.
Okay, why did they do that?
Well, there's a little secret that we also discovered, similar to our demographic insights. When the way most countries grow, and in Europe and in the U.S. to follow, we're just earlier in the cycle, is by urbanizing and industrialization. And even today, in a third world country, India, Brazil, China, we can measure that when you simply move a person, a skillless, uneducated, say, farmer, into a city, their income doubles and more often triples. So that's the fastest way to increase your GDP. Now, China wanted to do that even faster. So the only way they could move people that fast is to have them build stuff for nobody. All these empty condos, all these empty malls. And China's just thinking, well, one of these days we'll need them. Well, if you look at their demographics, with a shrinking workforce for the next several decades, they're not going to need all these infrastructures. And they built enough for the rest of the rural population just about to move to cities in the next 10 to 15 years, even if they did at the rate of the past, which will never happen. But they've overbuilt everything. China doesn't need more infrastructures, and they're going to have to realize at some point and stop building stuff for nobody. When they do that, they're going to have massive unemployment. Real estate prices are going to collapse, and on and on. That's why I say the biggest disaster in modern history. We don't even know what debt or real estate bubble compared to what's happened there. Their real estate's up seven times since 2000. You know, ours a little more than doubled. And look at the real estate problems we've had.
There's an interesting side effect of that. I did some speaking in Northern California, and there was a guy in the audience who said that he had bought a $1 million home in San Jose, and was in 2 years it was worth $2 million, and he was going to hold on till it was worth $7 million. And yep. I thought, that's a lot of expectation for one house. And then he basically told me he was from Shanghai, and that's what had happened there.
Yeah.
And so not only do you bring the money that came from that transaction, you bring the expectation and maybe the carelessness as well.
Yeah, and I'd love to see that $2 million home. I guarantee it looks closer to a trailer than a McMansion.
You're right. As a matter of fact, we really actually know the gentleman. There's another example of that, and he said that the two homes that were bought for $50 that got sold for $500 were barely livable. So you're correct.
Yeah.
When Japan had the boom during the 80s, that also had ramifications for our country in some assets. I'm more familiar with what it did to real estate, but they brought their money here,
Just like the Chinese are today. Guess
Correct.
Who's buying all the homes in Southern California, a large percent? Chinese. Guess who's buying them in London, Vancouver, Toronto, San Francisco? This is the same thing all over again. They make a fortune on their real estate bubble, and then they take those profits and reinvest it in the key leading cities, especially where there's English-speaking good schools, like California, like New York, and London, all these places, Singapore, Australia. They drive up those properties, and then everybody bursts when they burst. When they run out of buying power, they stop buying at the edge, and then the price, and then there's nobody left to buy overvalued. I mean, there was just a year or so ago, a condo went for $13,000 a square foot, $120 million for a 7,700 square foot condo in downtown Manhattan. Now, that isn't a crock. I don't know what is. That thing will probably be worth $10 to $15 million before it's all over. It's going to be an 80 to 90% drop. I see similar for Shanghai because they have bubbled up more and they don't really have the income there. It's a fake economy. But even in California, I think in the U.S., I think there's going to be another drop in real estate in the next few years, and it's going to be worse than the last one. It's going to go lower. And as usual, the places that are going to do the best, the apartments are in the sweet spot of the demographic cycle for the next generation. And as fewer and fewer people have confidence in home prices going up or can get a loan, apartments will probably continue to do well. But you know, especially the high-end, these McMansions and these trophy properties, I hate to see what's going to happen. You know, we're in a little trophy area in northern Tampa, and it got hit on a lag last time, but it got hit harder. Nobody thought things would go down in a place where all the sports stars did, but the things that bubble up the most go down. And they just had a 30,000 square foot marble French mansion that was on the market for 24 million years ago, finally sold for $5 million.
Mm-hmm. When the Japanese boom ended, what happened to their investments outside of their country that they had made? First of all, they probably stopped making any new ones. But were they leveraged investments, or did they own most of this stuff free and clear when they bought?
I don't think they own it always free and clear. The thing is that they're overextended. They're using their profits from their real estate in Japan, which had bubbled up dramatically, not as much as China, but dramatically back then, to then lever and borrow and buy stuff over here. And when things start to go and all your real estate assets start to collapse, you have to like sell some to cover others. Well, you're more likely to sell your foreign real estate than your domestic, because that's where you live. So, you know, it's just that bubbles feed on bubbles. Government make money cheaper than it should be. Governments guarantee loans. Governments, you know, and banks lend with no money down. Everybody just keeps going. The illusion with real estate has always been, it's the one thing that can't go down. Yeah, everybody knows stocks go up and down. They just think it won't happen in their time frame or to them. And every time there's a bubble, they say, well, it's not a bubble because of this. But real estate, we really have not. Anybody alive today just about has not seen real estate go down until 2008, substantially. Maybe some sectors, California got hit in the early 90s on the high end. Texas got hit with the oil crash in the 80s. But we've seen real estate go up all our life because the first middle class emerged after World War II and just started buying real estate like crazy and could qualify for mortgages for the first time. And then the baby boom followed them. So we don't understand real estate. The truth is, and Robert Shiller showed this with his longer-term analysis, if you adjust for inflation, the size and quality of the house, homes are not appreciating assets. And that doesn't mean you can't make money on them. They generate income from rents, or they can save you the mortgage or rents, you know. But they're not appreciating assets. Stocks average 7% over long periods of time, adjusted for inflation. Homes don't. Gold is the worst. Gold, you can't even get income off of. And when you adjust for inflation over hundreds of years, gold doesn't appreciate. It's not an appreciating asset. So stocks are good for long-term appreciation. Real estate's good if you buy good stuff and rent it out of positive cash flow, just like we learned in Monopoly. In gold, it only does well when inflation's roaring, like in the 60s and 70s, and everybody thinks it's going to protect you. Gold got slammed in the 2008 crash. It did not protect people, and we've been saying it's going to keep going down, and it's going to get slammed again. I could see gold at $250 to $400 within the next several years, and I think it's going to be $700 within 2 years.
Okay. I'm tempted to ask you where are we going to hide, but I'm going to wait till we do that in the next segment. I want to just talk a little bit more about your history of what you've said in the past. So the great boom ahead, that was in 1992. You didn't have a lot of company with that sentiment. There was a lot more books that were very bearish.
Yeah, and they sold a lot more than I did back then. My book, okay. My book sold from 95 on, but yeah, 92, 93, you know, you had the Great Reckoning, you had bankruptcy 1995, you know, Robbie Botcher's The Great Depression of 1990. You know, the Depression books were selling, and everybody was saying the U.S. has seen its better days and Japan's going to take over the world. We said the opposite. The U.S. is just coming into its baby boom, and Japan's is just getting ready to peak and go down, and their whole real estate and stock bubble is going to collapse. You know, I mean, this stuff's pretty obvious if you look at it, but people just extrapolate trends, and they're doing that with China. China's grown at between 8 and 12% for the last couple decades, and all this urbanization stuff, and people just are projecting, well, that's going to keep happening, and China's going to be the biggest economy in the world. They're not. They're going to slow unbelievably and probably have the biggest depression in history. Much worse than ours. And in our demographics, we have a substantial echo boom generation, not larger than the baby boom, but kind of replaces it. That's more than, I mean, most of Europe doesn't have that. Japan, Korea, all of South East Asia does not have that. China does not have that. So down the road, we're going to look okay. And a lot of the countries people say, you know, going to do great are going to fade, just like Japan did in the 90s. If you had just looked at demographics, you would have known it was impossible for Japan to overtake the U.S. economy unless they made three times as much money per capita as we do. And they're good, but they're not that good.
Okay. Got to talk about the one book title that you probably don't like that's there, but The Great Depression Ahead in 2009.
Yeah. Yeah.
So at one time you felt that was the likely outcome, and that it probably would already be in full swing. So I guess my question is, what happened that prevented the outcome you thought was going to?
Well, for, you know, that book actually came out in late October of 2008, right in the midst of the worst of the crisis, and it was written, you know, several months before that. We saw that coming. We predicted 20 years ago that 2008 would be the beginning of the slowdown of the baby boomers and the bursting, you know, of a big bubble market. But we did not, I did not even remotely consider that central banks around the world, for the first time in history, would not only put interest rates at zero, but would throw $10 to $12 trillion in cold, hard, artificial cash into the economy. Obviously, you know, banks, central banks always lower interest rates. Governments always run some extra deficits and spend some extra money to help. But this has never even remotely happened. So what they've done is refuel the bubble. In other words, in 1929, the bubble burst and all types of debts went bad and banks went under and depositors lost money and all these sort of things. But debt deleveraged substantially. We went from 200% debt to GDP down to 60% over the years to follow, which made our economy stronger long term. The price of everything, housing, commodities, cost of living went down. That makes your economy stronger and a standard of living better over time. But it was a depression. It was a debt deleveraging, and that is always the most painful thing that could happen to the economy. So that's what we expected. It didn't happen because government stepped in, and now we're just saying, hey, we've had 5 to 6 years of them just pumping back up the bubble. Now there's more income inequality than ever. Stocks are more overvalued than ever. There's more debt than we had before the last bubble, even though some consumer debt deleveraged, corporate debt's higher. Companies been borrowing money at nothing to buy back their stock and make their earnings look better than they are. And speculators are taking money and levering up 30 to 50 to 1, and that's why oil's, you know, bubbled up and is crashing again just like last time. So all the central banks have done, kept the bubble going, kept the imbalances, and we're going to have to deal with this debt. We're going to have to deal with these bubbles, because unless they deflate, the next generation has no chance of affording a house, no chance of investing for retirement, no chance of having anywhere near the standard of living we had. So we're going to have to go through this, and we're seeing that hey, everything's cracking. You know, they tried to hold it together in Europe. We said, no, the demographics get worse. Well, they're not able to hold it together, and it's going to get worse. China bubble is starting to crack. Prices are starting to fall. Developers are discounting up to 40%. They've never done that in China. That is against the Holy Grail, because they sell overvalued real estate to affluent investors who don't rent it out, because there is no rental market in China. People don't rent. If you're a guy and you don't own a home or a condo or something, or at least 300 square feet, you have no chance of getting a date or anything. No chance. Not a rental society. So they just leave these things empty. So that's what makes it so dangerous over there. It's just the whole thing is a bubble, and bubbles always burst. It's the one thing we stand by, because we study history. Bubbles always burst, and the greater the bubble, the greater the burst, and the greatest bubbles happen in the hottest cities and the hottest stocks, not in, you know, Ohio. And all these people I know in New York, San Francisco, L.A., Sydney, London, all the richest people in the world think these are the cities that cannot go down, and those are the ones that history proves goes down the worst when they finally burst.
I can speak to the, and we only have about a minute, 10 seconds in this segment, the intervention definitely prevented a much worse scenario that would have unfolded in California real estate. And even given that, we went from 600,000 to 250, and it took less than 18 months to accomplish that. But when they stopped foreclosing on properties and stopped putting that inventory in the MLS, you sort of had a respite in all the policies that came in between that. But had they foreclosed on everybody that stopped making a payment, it would have been not very comfortable to see what would have happened. So I guess at the end of the day, I have to look at that and say they did prevent a Great Depression, only to say, okay, you know, what's next may not be any more pleasant, but I guess that's what we'll talk about.
Well, it could only be worse. So if you take more of a drug to keep from coming down, you're only going to crash harder. That's what life says.
What is the website that people can go to look at your materials?
HarryDent.com. We got a free daily newsletter, very high content and educational. And DentResearch.com is where you learn more about our company and all we do and our methods and, you know, broader array of services we offer.
Okay. Harry Dent, thank you for joining us, and we'll catch you on the next segment.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.